speaking with a very innovative digital native CEO. He's of the mind that there's about a 6-month window to transform their services, their products, and fundamentally the give-get value of their customer relationships with AI. And once some type of product market fit hits, they will be moving at such a velocity that it becomes impossible for competitors number 2, 3, 4 to catch up.
Hello and welcome back to Where AI Works, conversations at the intersection of AI and industry, brought to you by Wharton in collaboration with Accenture. I'm your host, Sergey Netesin, Professor of Operations, Information and Decisions at the Wharton School, and I'm a Senior Vice Dean for Innovation and Global Initiatives. It's our goal to cut through the noise and to deliver actionable insights for business leaders by combining cutting-edge research with real-world case studies. Things are changing fast, so without further ado, let's dive in.
Open source is at the core of GitHub, and we are taking this next big step.
And for CIOs, IT pros, business decision makers, we know compliance, measurement, and observability are paramount.
What does that mean for vertical SaaS companies? How do they prepare themselves for this future?
On this episode, I'm keen to find out how AI is delivering measurable business results as organizations move past pilots and turn AI initiatives into scalable, sustainable value. We will explore the sectors and functions that are seeing tangible returns and address the critical factors that separate successful AI deployment from failed ones. In my own research at Wharton, in the upcoming report on startup and corporate collaboration, we highlighted that a lot of AI implementations are happening at this edge of big company collaborating with sometimes very tiny startup. To help me dig deeper into this topic, I am very excited to highlight a company that has been a cornerstone of the tech industry for decades. I have with me today Teresa Nemeshani, a worldwide director of private equity and venture capital partnerships at Microsoft. Teresa, welcome to Where AI Works.
Thank you, Sergey. It's terrific to be here.
Teresa, so we've known each other for a few years and you spoke in my classes. You are obviously a Wharton graduate. Could you give us a little bit of overview of your role at Microsoft and how your career brought you to this wonderful company?
So first of all, I'm part of a team called Worldwide Private Capital. We are part of Microsoft corporately. The notion behind our team is a lot of world-class investors in venture capital and private equity want to know what Microsoft is doing, what we're investing in, what our roadmaps are, what we're interested in acquiring. With that in mind, in order to kind of reduce noise, we launched this team to equip our executives with that more focused signal and manage relationships with a small list of the very top. I manage a small number of very large venture capital and private equity firms. And on a very specific basis, we are both driving the conversation between our companies and then also looking at their portfolios and helping them ideate around ways that they can create really outsized value by taking advantage of what Microsoft has.
How has your role evolved as AI became more and more central to Microsoft's mission?
I have to tell you, I've been at Microsoft for almost 12 years, and nothing has hit as hard as AI in terms of our conversation. You know, the cloud generally has been on the table for quite a long time. Digital transformation has been core, and that intersection between cutting edge startup innovation and scalability always on the table. But AI is bringing it to a completely different level. How my career brought me to this? You know, it's funny. I think when I wrote my Wharton application, they said, well, what do you want to do? And I said, well, I want to be a really senior person at the time I called it a media company globally that's driving innovation. And at the time I thought that that meant television and things like that. That was back in the early to mid 90s. Obviously the world has completely transformed and I'm someone who, as a daughter of an engineer and someone in sales, I'm always obsessed with that intersection of the very newest of the new and how we turn them into business models and do that in a way that is completely scalable, and in fact, so scalable that it will change the world.
I'm very glad to hear that AI completely changed your conversation with your clients, conversations within Microsoft. So if you look from your vantage point, where do you see AI truly driving business value? There is, of course, lots of experimentation going on, lots of hype, but how about driving real value?
So our conversation pretty typically is going to focus on three main areas. Early out of the gate, as you know, is developer productivity through GitHub and GitHub Copilot. Our company quickly saw that new capabilities were going to be very well served within the developer space. So that was a clear, pointy area where the pain is there, meaning it's hard to hire great developers. Everybody has a really huge backlog. So that was not really a monetization play, but for sure a productivity play, helping software companies or companies that develop software, which is pretty much everybody these days, be more strategic about what they're doing. So that would be number one. Number two, I would be remiss to not talk about Microsoft 365 and our whole modern work suite as AI has been pulled through the veins of that. It really is putting capability into people's hands to figure out what their workflows can and should be so that they can do their work so much better. When you're democratizing AI that way, meaning their actual everyday tools, ability to do analysis, ability to draft emails or whatever it might be, that can be incredibly powerful very, very quickly. The third piece that underpins everything that we do is security. So there's no question that the velocity and complexity of threat is greater than it ever has been. And Microsoft made very clear decisions very early on to prioritize security above all else by leveraging AI to keep our customers safe and secure. I would also add to that innovating products with the customers and partners that I do work with.
So what I hear is number one, two, and three is really about driving productivity in, you know, software development. But the fourth one is very interesting. It's innovating products. So that sounds like more about increasing revenues for your clients, right? Rather than driving productivity. Can you elaborate on those products? What are those products that you are collaborating on?
When I speak to the customers and software companies that we do business with and investors in those software companies, the holy grail is to be monetizing, creating fresh revenue. The reality is that the market isn't fully there yet on how to do it. So to transform a workflow and then charging more for it, tricky, because you need to bring something new to the market that wasn't there before. What we're seeing by and large is a lot of innovation in that gray space between revenue and cost, you know, things like customer centers, call centers, things like revenue renewals, you know, places where there's a lot of leakage and the cost to serve that revenue is very high. Because this provides companies a really tangible sandbox to experiment, learn how to use the tools, get immediate feedback from their customer and end users. And really every single point of goodness that comes back will hit the top line. So that's where we're seeing it right now. Also, I will say that the revenue innovation is tending more towards long tail. So providing ability to do product extensions or versioning of products that will not require people in the same way that they would for a high-end, you know, enterprise client, let's say. So in this case, it's right-sizing, if you will, a product in a way that is scalable for distribution to a customer base that otherwise you wouldn't have gone after in a purely analog world.
I see. Okay, so it's basically enables large-scale personalization to a variety of smaller clients, it sounds like.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. I do have a number that really are thinking about, you know, taking that thread that you just said of personalization and layering on top of that with AI that is that much more data-driven, you know, especially the more data sources that we can draw on that have traditionally lived in silos, but now we can start pulling them in and not only huge plug for Azure Data Fabric as an example, but being able to pull in from a wide variety of data sources and to do it on the fly and to do it within the context of an agentic conversation, let's say. A lot of power there.
Is there a particular vertical that you would highlight where this adoption is translating into ROI faster? Is it more finance function, sales function? From your previous description, it sounds like IT function is definitely one of them where you're seeing significant ROI.
Yeah, so we do both horizontal and vertical. Personally, I tend to be a horizontal person, especially in the agentic world. I'm kind of looking at software development companies that serve other software companies. So one bit of work that I just had a great pleasure of participating in is with Gainsight, which is leading software as a service company for customer success management, which in and of itself is a pretty new function, or it's a new function to the SaaS world. So imagine that you have an OS, if you will, or a dashboard for managing customer success. Well, then you can start going, okay, well, what workflows in this can become agents? And that will, you know, give pretty straight line of sight to ROI on revenue. So these are, you know, let's say horizontal tools being built on Microsoft products that are then being offered to other large companies that aren't going to build their own customer success management system, if you will. So that's also where the scalability comes into place. So that was a horizontal example. A lot of my colleagues are working on very deep vertical solutions. And I think what I would say, generally speaking, is we're talking about ones that are really, really, really data intense. You know, so we talk about and hear about drug discovery. We hear about oil and gas, just very data intensive, computationally intensive sources of data, if you will. So these types of workflows require deep, deep domain expertise in order to do it. So you will never have a software developer working on that on their own. You know, they are in service to the scientists, the chemists, the you name it, who really have the vision for where that particular unique asset and knowledge base needs to go.
I want to dive deeper into monetization. Obviously, Microsoft invested very heavily in AI platforms, Azure and Copilot and so on. How do your clients monetize AI? Do you see some patterns in pricing models evolving? Is it usage-based? Is it seat-based? Is it outcome-based?
I have to tell you, from that perspective, it is still really early days. You know, speaking with a very innovative digital native CEO shed some insight that I thought would be really interesting here. He's of the mind that there's about a 6-month window to transform their services, their products, and fundamentally the give-get value of their customer relationships with AI. There's a really, really limited window. And once some type of product market fit hits, they will be moving at such a velocity that it becomes impossible for competitors number 2, 3, 4 to catch up. So that's the way that I would be thinking about it. I'm hearing people talk more about market share within their competitive set and their positioning, and that it is historically during times of great disruption where massive market share gains can be made and lost.
Interesting. Let me ask you maybe a somewhat different question. So you already started alluding to the fact that you see some success with AI in high cost to serve applications, like, you know, contact centers, customer service, and so on. Do you see any patterns in how companies are proving that AI actually works, that it delivers value? Do you see a particular ROI, some performance metrics that companies are trying to track to prove that AI is actually improving productivity or growing revenues or doing both of those things?
I know you want numbers.
Always.
Always. And it's tricky in the sense that we're talking about very, very different workflows. We know that, let's say with GitHub Copilot, we saw quite quickly a 30% improvement in productivity. That's a nice, solid, well-researched kind of a number for just taking a workflow and dropping some steps, leapfrogging some steps, compressing some steps, that sort of thing. And the example that I gave to you before, where you'd be talking about creating or versioning products in order to get at the long tail, those will probably be almost completely automated products. So the margin on that is completely different, right? I mean, that's where you're absolutely looking for scale. Another place where I see a lot of success is in business applications that draw on a very, very large corpus of data. So let's say things like regulatory, you know, where you have lots of different rules coming from lots of different places, and those need to be evaluated for compliance and possibly for some sort of monetization or whatnot, you know, on the fly. And AI in the form that we have today is fantastic for that. When you think about what large language models and then also small language models are really, really good at, it's drawing on, you know, information that's already there and that you have confidence in its applicability to the problem at hand, which is a reason why I give that example of regulatory, because it is an existing set of data. It's just more than a human being can handle.
Makes a lot of sense. So from monetization for your clients, I want to ask you about monetization for Microsoft. So how do you think about monetizing AI across all of your products? Are there any lessons you can share on, you know, bundling, upselling, creating an ecosystem? What are you seeing there?
It's our job to empower developers and business users to create what they need in order to achieve more. They are the experts in it. We are not. So we imagine a world and an ecosystem of best-in-class tools that are constantly up to date, you know, a place you can go and leverage the very best, the very newest. So for example, we have over 1,800 models in Azure AI Foundry today. You know, I hear a lot on Wharton chats and whatnot about, well, what about this model? What about that model? It drives me crazy. The real question that should be asked is, what is a company's AI capability? What's that capability over time as the world of AI changes? And then what is that impact on the business? So imagine managing AI as a capability. Imagine a world where there is not a single model to rule them all. Managing AI means picking the best models for a particular point in time. Now, the efficacy of any model could be shifting from one second to the next as well. So you probably need an overlay of A/B testing of models that are in use at any time. Like, just managing all of that can get really, really complex. And so that's where Microsoft is playing really big. That's where we're making our biggest investments. We don't want to be the kingmaker of this model or that model. We want to say, developers, you tell us which are the best models. We'll make them available. We'll make them delightful to access. So it's absolutely an ecosystem play. There's no question about it. You know, we have a lot of people are creating their own co-pilots, their own agents for their own processes. And that is as it should be. So let's say in M365, you know, we get paid on usage of the platform. So the more useful the platforms are, the better that is for us. It's a really elegant alignment between, you know, who our customers are and who is paying us for our value and providing super, super tight feedback that they're getting what they need.
I like this KPI of usefulness. So, you know, people pay you for being useful. And the more useful you are, the more they pay. And AI, of course, makes Microsoft as an ecosystem more useful. I want to move to our final segment where I want to discuss challenges on the road to monetization. So, of course, many companies struggle with turning AI into scalable and repeatable systems. What kind of blockers do you see to monetize AI effectively for your clients?
I think the ones that have the best grasp on their customer and what delivers truly a differentiated end customer experience provides that true north for working backwards. And then, you know, you apply the tools like you would apply any other tools toward it. When you know your customer and when you know what differentiation means for them, you're getting close to the data around what will they pay more for, what are they not paying for that they would, you know, et cetera. So it's very easy in this highly technical world to look for quick fixes by just diving straight into the data. And that's not wrong, but that true north of customer understanding, there's no substitute. And I find more often than not, banging up quantitative versus qualitative data back and forth is kind of where the magic starts to happen. A second piece I would say is that generally speaking, these kinds of initiatives are highly cross-matrix from a functional perspective. And it is really hard to get specialists from different areas to speak the same language and rally against a similar goal. They're generally very busy doing their day jobs. So freeing them up to ask these provocative and bigger questions, not so easy, especially when, you know, management is already looking to define an ROI in order to deploy the person to spend time on it. So it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, going after cost savings or reduced revenue leakage, if you will. It's just measurable. So the ROI is there.
Okay. Wow. This is a wonderful and powerful list of things to worry about. Does Microsoft play some role in helping your clients to move kind of from a pilot to something that actually scales?
Oh, yeah. We do a lot with envisioning sessions, with sharing examples of capability and facilitating them with management teams to find relevance for these freshly new capabilities within the context of their business. But it, you know, they're the ones that know their business. So they know if that's going to become a source of differentiation, if you will. The second piece, so monetization and scaling, that's a big yes. This is really, really important to Microsoft. And this keys into, you know, the ecosystem play. Our partners who've built amazing products with Microsoft Cloud, it's completely in our interest to have them succeed. It is in our interest to make them available, create pull-through to our customers, to our shared customers, as well as our customers whom those partners haven't reached yet. We're all about marketplaces, and this is not unique to Microsoft, but our view of it is extremely partner-centric and hyper-aligned towards shared positive results. So in my area, which is the partnership area, I mean, we're essentially looking for the next generation of such partners to be in our ecosystem because they bring either the horizontal or the vertical expertise that we don't have, but which our shared customers require. It's our greatest privilege to work with the best partners in the world to drive amazing outcomes. So if there's anyone listening to this podcast that would like to think hard and deeply about the world of the possible, we would love to work with you.
Wonderful. That's a great ending. It's been a real pleasure speaking with you today, Teresa. And thank you for giving us a peek behind the curtain of one of the world's most iconic tech companies.
It's been a pleasure.
Let me review the key takeaways from my conversation with Teresa today. We've heard again that AI deployment is still in very nascent stages. Nobody really has figured out how to monetize AI in kind of in a one way. Every company is trying different approaches. You have to experiment. You have to have a proper culture for this. You have to run through short sprints and see what works. See which vertical or horizontal application seems to be the most fruitful. There is not going to be one solution, one business model that works in every single application. We saw some emerging successes. We saw big productivity gains using GitHub. We saw some successes in, for example, handling large sets of data, which is very difficult to do for humans. But beyond that, you have to really look for some high cost to serve areas where there is just an inherent pain point that can be solved by AI, and again, work backwards from your customer. That's all for today. Thanks so much for listening. Please follow us so you don't miss an episode, like our upcoming season finale featuring Ajay Anand, the SVP of Global Services Strategy and Business Services at Johnson & Johnson. This has been Where AI Works, conversations at the intersection of AI and industry, brought to you by Wharton in collaboration with Accenture. I am Sergey Nitesin. Goodbye for now.